This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The United States Senate met early this morning to advance the confirmation of billionaire Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education. DeVos is a big-time Republican campaign contributor and a school choice supporter. She has no prior experience in education. The DeVos selection is just one of many controversial picks by Donald Trump. Constituents in North Carolina flooded the phone lines of state representatives expressing concern about Trump's nominations. They were not alone. The same was happening all over the country. Here in North Carolina, both Senator Burr and Senator Tillis, both Republicans, support DeVos. Joining us now to talk about the choices and other hot topics in politics are the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Hi, Frank, and it was great seeing you last week at in Pittsboro, North Carolina.
It was great to see you, too. Great to have you here in person and talking politics, and we're talking politics still. And early morning, I guess, you know, I used to live in Washington. You still do. Traffic is really miserable, so Mitch McConnell thought, hey, let's beat the traffic, and we'll get in there before dawn and have a session. Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, they had it at 6:30. The Republicans were tired of Democrats. Democrats don't have much leverage in blocking anybody in the cabinet, probably because of what Harry Reid did in 2013. The Democrats were so tired of Republican obstructionism with Obama nominees that Harry Reid basically got rid of this filibuster on any appointment other than Supreme Court nominees. And we'll talk about that in a second if we want to. But so the Democrats could now filibuster the cabinet nominees, and that killed the Democrats this year because now all it is a simple majority vote, and with 52 votes in the Senate, the Republicans have the upper hand.
Right.
So anyway, so what they did with Betsy DeVos, basically, the vote today was 52-48, so to stop any hint of a filibuster, and it advanced her nomination next week for full confirmation.
Now, there are two Republicans who have already broken ranks, but that's not enough to scotch the nomination with Pence as the deciding vote as a tiebreaker. So what's the possibility of a third Republican breaking ranks between now and Monday?
Well, as you point out, the calls to Tillis and Burr is going on all over the country. Both Senators Murkowski and Collins, the two Republicans who are going to vote against Betsy DeVos, say their offices have been flooded with phone calls. So it is effective. And you need one more Republican. So there's so much pressure on either Republicans up for re-election in 2018, although nobody seems to be in any jeopardy of losing. Maybe Jeff Flake from a right-wing opponent in Arizona. So I don't think that's the way to go. So they're trying to get any kind of moderate Republican, whatever's left of them, to vote no. It may have to be a Mike Pence 50-50 tiebreaker.
All right, let's talk about the Secretary of State vote. That was one for the history books, right?
It was. The vote on Rex Tillerson this week was 56-43. Now, while that's not close, it's the most, 43 votes is the most any Secretary of State got against that person in history. Condoleezza Rice had 13 senators voting against her in 2005. Henry Clay, before he changed his name to Henry Ali, Henry Clay got 14 votes against him in back in the day. So Tillerson had the most negative votes, but still, he is the Secretary of State.
But let's talk a little bit about this, because you mentioned, you know, the calls now flooding the phones for particularly Republican senators now, what effect it might have. Look, let's take a look at this president and wonder how long the Republicans continue to support him. He starts out at a 32% approval rate. He now has an aggregate of about 42% for an incoming president. Historically low still. Lowest ever still in terms of public approval, according to the polls. You've got a guy who didn't win the popular vote. He's 3 million votes short of that. The inauguration falls short of the popular support that we'd seen in previous inaugurations. And massive resistance, people pouring into the streets and making phone calls against this president. How long can Republicans continue to support him? And why would they?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, you know, they still make the argument, a lot of these Republicans still make the argument that it's a new president and he's entitled to have the cabinet he wants. But as we saw with the executive order on immigration, there was no hesitation from many Republicans to say this is just crazy. You heard it from even Mitch McConnell and John McCain and Jeff Flake saying this is just not the right way to go. But so there are Republicans who are willing to talk. Remember when Richard Nixon was forced out in 1970, 1974, it was Republicans who went to him and said, the gig is up. It's time to, you're no longer tenable. And maybe that's what Donald Trump may need to keep him in line, Republicans. But at the same time, let's not forget these Democratic senators, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, others who are voting for many of Donald Trump's nominees. So while there are Republicans, people are hoping to stop Trump in some way or shape or form, there are Democrats who, to the regret of the progressives, are going along with many Trump appointees.
Donald Trump went to a prayer breakfast yesterday. Tell us more about it. Well, no, he during the campaign, he told us that he has accepted Jesus as his personal savior.
There's no evidence until 2015, 2016 that Donald Trump has ever mentioned the name of God in anything he's ever said. But he's at this prayer breakfast, and as always, not only is it all about him, but he spent much of the time talking about his great ratings he got when he was the host of the Apprentice. And then he said that we should pray for Arnold Schwarzenegger, because the new host of the Celebrity Apprentice is getting terrible ratings, and we should pray for him. And then, of course, he talked about how mean the media is, but this was at a prayer breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, every time I talk to you, Frank, I keep saying, this is remarkable, this is amazing, but it's not remarkable.
Right.
It stops becoming remarkable if it happens every day.
He decided to talk about Black History Month, and that's when let's listen. Let's just listen.
Very proud now that we have a museum in the National Mall where people can learn about Reverend King, so many other things. Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I notice. Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, and millions more Black Americans who made America what it is today. Big impact.
Yeah, that's it's trending, I think.
I think Freddie is named Freddie Douglass. Yeah,
Freddie
I don't
Douglas.
Know much about him, but
he's trending.
He's doing an incredible job.
What's the reaction to this? I mean, this is obviously a man who doesn't know much about Frederick Douglass.
If he does, he's really not
displaying any of that knowledge in what he just said. So, what's the reaction to that?
Well, the reaction, I mean, of course, you know, he's been brutalized on social media and mocked here, you know, it's like when Neil Gorsuch was nominated, he nominated him for him, he said, I read all of his cases. Does anybody believe that he read all of his opinions? I mean, it just seems like Donald Trump just gives his speech, and especially with Frederick Douglass saying he's done an amazing job and he's being recognized more and more, as if he heard about him for the first time by reading the papers. I mean, people say that's kind of silly. We're focusing on petty stuff, but it's one after another of seeming non-understanding of what he's talking about.
Well, sure, an engagement with minority populations and the way in which he engages and understands, you know, what that struggle is and who are the key figures in a history that is troubled because of its relationship here in the United States. Not suggesting that you don't have a deep understanding that is troubling for those minorities going forward. I would guess, and that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing reflected, at least in some of the response.
Exactly, Frank. I mean, the other, you know, a while ago when he talked about John Lewis, the congressman from Georgia, and he, you know, what did he ever accomplish? What did he ever do? It's like I had no idea who John Lewis is,
right.
And it certainly didn't sound like he had any idea who Frederick Douglass was.
And the credibility of the administration, you know, they have been called out on a number of inaccuracies that rise to the level of lie in the first 2 weeks of office. So their credibility at an all-time low. And then presidential advisor Kellyanne Conway makes some remarks about the Bowling Green massacre, which neither of us had heard about because it never happened. So tell us about that episode.
Well, you know something, I mean, she said it's something she said is a mistake. She was talking to Chris Matthews, and she was trying to defend the president's ban on these people coming in from the Muslim countries. And then she referred to a similar Obama ban, which never happened, regarding Iraqis years ago. And then she talked about these two Iraqis who came here and participated in the Bowling Green massacre. She meant to say they were Bowling Green terrorists and they were arrested before anything happened, but she referred to a massacre that didn't happen. But that's an unusual mistake for Kellyanne Conway, because she never backs down on anything, whether it's defending anything Donald Trump says. She seems to be more sure of herself than Donald Trump is. And when Kellyanne Conway says something that's probably incorrect, then you know the whole administration is in big trouble.
Let's talk briefly. I've got about a minute left, but foreign policy, a couple of real surprises there in the way that this administration administration now seems to be leaning toward or supporting Obama initiatives on foreign policy.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, of course, he seems to be threatening every ally we have. He's threatened NATO. He's threatened, of course, Mexico. He's threatened Australia, basically. And the only country he seems not to be threatening is Russia. We've talked about that before. But there are a lot of people who say, look, I can deal with the misstatements and the celebrity apprentice stuff and the exaggerations. But when you threaten world peace by threatening to stop China in the region and threatening to impose new sanctions on Iran, and of course embarrassing Australia, one of our top allies, you just wonder if it's just a complete bizarro world when it comes to who the good guys are and who the bad guys
are. Though he is promising to keep the sanctions against Russia in place, at least for now.
For now, that's correct. But we haven't seen a tweet in the last 15 minutes. I'll get back to you in a half hour.
Yeah, I should let you go to follow the Twitterverse. Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Thanks so much, Ken, as always.
Thank you, Frank.
Find out more about Ken and his website at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the history behind political isms and how they shape political discourse in America. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.